On Wednesday, July 3rd, we chatted with Fairfield Republican State Senator Tony Wong about a great 4th of July event coming up in his town. Later on in the show, we talked about an budding controversy in Fairfield regarding affordable housing. And then we wrapped the whole thing up with, well, my producer Aaron and myself talking about the merits of live tweeting a television show. Fairfield GOP State Senator Tony Wong. Tony, Paul here. How are you, sir?
I'm great, Paul, and happy birthday to America.
You too, you too. Have you y'all stocked up on bottle rockets and M80s and cherry? Come on, no, Tony, level with me. What stupid thing? Because I've come clean here. What dumb thing did you do with fireworks growing up? Come on, we all did something stupid. What'd you do?
You know what? We really didn't have a lot of opportunity for fireworks. It's been busy days of barbecuing, playing American Legion baseball.
Yeah.
You know, we were too busy to get into trouble.
Uh-huh. So that's the line you're giving me, huh?
How about that as an answer, right? You know, I think talking about America's birthday,
yeah.
You know, it's not too bad for a country that just a little over 240 years old when you think about it's relatively young and the impression that we have made in the course of history. You know, we live in the greatest country in the world, and you know, I always look at the 4th as an opportunity to really celebrate what has really made this country great, and that is the people and the values that we stand for.
And you know what, Tony, and I said this earlier in the show, you take a look at all the unrest, some of it, listen, no country is perfect, obviously, but you take a look at what's going on now on the southern border. And you take a look at even some of the problems we have here in Connecticut with, you know, people that are undocumented and all that. But if you pull back and take a wide view of this, Tony, what that tells us is that there are millions of people, if given the opportunity, will still come to this country, even with all our nicks, dents, and scratches here. You have people, by legal methods or otherwise, scratching and clawing to get into this country.
Look, I was one of those individuals. My family looked at this country as one of the greatest in the world, and as an immigrant, it has fulfilled the promise to our family. We have been given every opportunity to succeed, and this is an incredible country. And for those that struggle with it, yes, is it pretty? Absolutely not. But, you know, I think we need to take a step back and recognize that the freedoms and the opportunities and the successes we have in this country are because of the people, not government. It's because of the people. And, you know, as we looked at fireworks, barbecue, and now in D.C., I guess, a military parade with tanks, we need to remember back what truly has made this country great is the values that we stand for.
So, Tony, what is going on in your hometown starting tomorrow at 10 a.m.?
Well, tomorrow at 10 a.m., a tradition that has lasted 126 years, the annual Independence Day celebration. It is co-hosted by the United Veterans Group, which encompasses the American Legion and the VFWs and the various veteran groups, along with the Eunice Denny Burr chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution. For 126 years, they have held this celebration in which patriotism, America is celebrated through songs. And actually what's unique is they will have a complete reading of the Declaration of Independence. And it's going to be done by a bunch of talented teen actors dressed in the garb of Ben Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, and John Adams, the three authors of the Declaration of Independence. We're going to have a fife and drum, Spirit of 1776, leading the March of Colors. It really is a neat reminder that we're celebrating the greatness of the country based upon this Declaration of Independence from England. And if you listen to it and read it, boy, I got to tell you, 240 plus years ago, we're still talking about the same thing. Government not listening to the people. It really is a remarkable insight and the brilliance of the people who founded this country to recognize these values never change.
And you know what else people should look at, Tony? I always talk about it this time of the year. Yes, our Declaration of Independence is wonderful. Our Constitution is wonderful. But I always tell folks the Magna Carta, another, you know, seminal document in the history of America. But you know what is, and I'm glad I was taught about it, Tony, in high school and in college. The Fundamental Orders of Connecticut were considered the framework for the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. You know, Tony, when you and Tony Wong is the guest, Republican State Senator from Fairfield, talking about the reading tomorrow, 10 a.m., the celebration and reading 120-plus years in Fairfield. When you talk, Tony, about the founders of this country, you know, we think we know it all. And I always say on shows like this, we have to strip ourselves of this arrogance into thinking we know it all because we've got all these fancy toys and we've got our wireless devices and PCs and laptops and notebooks and tablets and everything and instantaneous communication. We could talk to someone on the other side of the world at the flick of a button on Facebook or on Google or whatever. These guys had none of it, but they were such incredible thinkers. Now, they weren't perfect people. This came from an era that led to slavery. We get that. We understand that. But the pure ability of them to just think and come up with these ideas, you read some of their things, Tony, today, some of their, you know, some of the things that, that James Madison said and Ben Franklin and Roger Sherman out of New Haven, who was the only person, I believe, to sign all major U.S. Colonial documents. It's breathtaking to read it today.
This is on a birthday where we recognize mm-hmm. that it gives rise for only a country, only 240 relatively young
yeah.
history of civilizations. We have made our mark, and I hope that we continue among that spirit and continue to be the greatest country in the world.
And if you don't vote, you've got no right to complain. That's what I think. So
absolutely.
That's it. Tony, tomorrow again, 10 a.m., where does this all start again?
It is at the historical Old Town Hall in Fairfield, Connecticut, next to the First Congregational Church with steeple towers. It is a beautiful setting, and the student teen actors do a great job. It's a wonderful experience, and I hope people come and enjoy and experience it because it will last in your memory and remember what we're celebrating the 4th of July to be all about.
Tony, thank you, and we'll talk to you down the line, buddy. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. Happy 4th to you.
You too, buddy. Be safe. Tony Wong there, Republican State Senator Fairfield, but no partisan affiliation needed on this one, folks. Tomorrow, 10 a.m., he said, Old Town Hall in Fairfield, teen reenaction, or reenactors, or actors reenacting the reading of the Declaration of Independence. As a lot of, you know, municipalities face as to affordable housing, how much of it should a town or city have, what constitutes affordable housing. People tend to not be happy with it from time to time. There's an argument about property values, where it is, this, that, and the other. So representing the town today, we have Carol Martin, who is the Fairfield Housing Corporation manager and executive director of the Fairfield Housing Authority. Carol, thanks for stopping by. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having us.
And also next to Carol, we have Christine Stewart, who is from the Fairfield County Center for Housing Opportunity. Hi, Christine. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much for stopping by. We appreciate it. Carol, first of all, what generally constitutes affordable housing? Does it vary by town or city? Or what is considered affordable housing?
Sure. So the state of Connecticut, under the statute, defines it at 80% of area median income. And area median income is actually a figure that is calculated based on the housing and urban, United States Housing and mm-hmm. Urban Development. And every year they work on census data and other reports to come out with, you know, the area median income. And so just to give you an idea,
sure, yeah.
a family of four living in Fairfield, Connecticut, at 80% of area median income is making, the ceiling income is $88,720.
That's a lot of money.
It sure
it's
is.
It's not, yeah.
It sure
so in
is.
Other words, is that number then what that family should be able to afford? Is that how they figure it?
That's correct. So based on $88,720, the threshold is typically 30% of that should be applied to your housing
cost. All
right,
so 3 times 8 is 24 grand, so the $2,000 a month.
Right.
And that Carol, Christine, I'm sorry, that's a pretty good amount of money. I mean, it's not like you're looking to rent to people for $300-$400 a month here.
No, we're talking about the people that make our communities work. We're talking about our teachers and our first responders, and the people that work in our banks and our other businesses.
Yeah.
It's the workforce. It's the engine that makes Fairfield County work.
Interesting. So I've been straightened out on the formula here. Now, an issue here, I know, folks, there's a specific area, specific track with a specific property number. Carol, talk a little about that, what the controversy is.
Sure. And first of all, hopefully there isn't any controversy when we're done. I think we're right in the midst of trying to educate folks because
that's
think everybody knows there's a huge affordable housing crisis, not only in Fairfield and Fairfield County. And so we meaning the Housing Authority of Fairfield and our nonprofit corporation, Fairfield Housing Corp, redeveloped Pine Tree Apartments located at 15 Pine Tree Lane in Fairfield. It was originally built in the mid-60s, 38 units. We fully demolished and built 50 affordable apartments. We just finished opening and closing our wait list. We have 50 apartments, about 3.5 weeks accepting applications. We got 1,200 applications.
I guess you won't have a problem there.
So everyone, I think, either anecdotally or based on this most current statistics, understands this is a huge problem for not only the county but the state. Mm-hmm. Some land became available that I became aware of. I ended up bidding, submitting a proposal.
Yeah.
Bidding for the property and was able to purchase 2.48 acres for $2.1 million.
Okay.
And those funds did not come from any, local taxes or, frankly, any state or federal funds. These were funds we earned from the previous transaction at Pine Tree.
Some money you made.
Correct.
Yeah, and you recycled
and we're
it
rolling
into
rolling it back into another, hopefully another affordable and lovely community.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I understand now, Christine, that there's a controversy here. Is there are some people that don't think that? They're worried about, from what I read, they're worried about the character of the neighborhood, the location of these units. Talk a little about that.
Right. I think that there is largely an issue with the association people have with the word affordable housing.
Yeah.
And I think that one of the best things that you can do to educate people is to have them take a look at the Pine Street development, other affordable, quote unquote, developments throughout the county that are absolutely in keeping with the towns where they've been built. I think sometimes people tend to worry that we're talking about
low income. They look at cities.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that is absolutely not the case. And Connecticut has lots of examples of beautiful, affordable developments that blend right into their communities. One of which is Carol's Last development, and you can take a look at. Mm-hmm. There's some in Old Saybrook. There's some in Westport. Exactly.
Yeah.
Carol's other development.
Yeah.
And so I think that's part of the problem. And I think there's also a tiny bit of what we like to call data disbelief, where people get concerned that housing is going to increase traffic problems or overtax school systems. And in fact, especially in the town of Fairfield, we have the data to show that that's not the case. For example, the school argument, if you check in with the town, they track this every year. Each affordable unit brings 0.015 children into the school system. I'm sorry, 0.15.
So you need 10 units for one kid.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I understand the fact that people pause and are concerned about that, but I do think it's important to share the actual data that sort of, sheds some light on the numbers.
Is there any talk about misconceptions? I think you've answered this. Have you been able to, I guess, quell would be the word, or tamp down any of the thought as, hey, this is going to be low-income housing and people are going to be imported from other cities and towns to live here? Have you ladies been able to get the message across that, no, you're not going to be able to rent these units with peanuts here?
Yeah, I've reached out, and actually the abutting property owners and I have, you know, fairly been in contact on, you know, almost every step of the way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, certainly they've seen Pine Tree, and I think they are very impressed with it. So I do think, you know, once someone sees something tangible, they meet the people that are going to be operating it.
Yeah.
You know, they walk around and they realize this looks like a high-end market rate development or a condo association, you know, well run, professionally managed. I think, you know, once people see things, it tends to really calm their, you know, calm their concerns.
Mm-hmm. Again, Carol, you say you're doing what you can to kind of bring both sides together here on this?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, in fairness, the property has been farmland for, you know, over 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
Folks that purchased their residence, you know, expected obviously that, you know, they'd be looking out onto farmland, you know, for the time that they owned it.
And that's so, the argument, right? Like, I didn't know this was going to happen.
Correct.
When I purchased the property.
Sure. And so from that, you know, completely understandable, and certainly, you know, I am concerned about it as well. And so, you know, we have obviously tried to reach out, and to the extent we can work with our abutting properties, property owners, to, you know, mitigate any, you know, any of the vision or, you know, screening activities, you know, we're working with them. I mean, there's some pretty creative things you can do with landscaping.
Mm-hmm.
And just the way that we've organized, you know, the construction of the units, Paul, you know, we're very concerned about, you know, lighting on the property, not spilling over, you know, onto our abutting property owners, as well as just in general, trying to make sure that, you know, we're going to do a really good job at screening for folks that we move in, as well as, you know, professionally managing it. If there is a problem, you know, they're calling a local entity. You know, our operations are local. We're located in the town of Fairfield. So mm-hmm. it's not somebody coming in from New York or Massachusetts, you know, doing property management once in a while. I mean, we're vested in this community. We're going to build it and we're going to operate it, you know, for as long as, you know, this organization exists.
I know, Christine, there are numbers of units of affordable housing that certain towns or cities or municipalities, have to be at, or the feds will kind of look at you and ask what's going on. Where is Fairfield on that right now?
I believe, and Carol can check me if I'm wrong, but I believe that they're shooting for a 10% goal, and that they're at about 2.5%
that
currently. Is that correct?
It's pretty close. I think it's actually 2.8%, but 2.5%.
So another 7% before the town catches up.
Well, ideally, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, ultimately for the town and the, frankly, to attract business back to Connecticut is, you know, not every business, especially small business, Paul, can afford to pay someone $100,000.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, we're really talking about, children getting educated in Fairfield, which has a great public school system, mm-hmm. going to Fairfield universities or even, you know, our great community colleges here that we have, and they're moving out of state. If that isn't a cause to pause, we should be asking ourselves. And the reason is, you know, they can either go back to home, you know, where home is, and wait to try to save some money and maybe wait to 30 to be able to afford a fair market rent or actually purchase something, or we can start diversifying our housing stock so that, you know, someone who is the manager of Kohl's can actually afford a rent in Fairfield and, you know, not tie up getting on the highway and driving someplace.
Yeah, and I think there's a stigma, ladies, when, again, I think it goes back to, because when you told me the average income of these people who would live here or are living in the town, you know, like $80,000, that's not, I'm sorry, with all due respect to the fine people that serve me at McDonald's and Wendy's, that's not a hamburger flipper job. You know, it's
correct.
Not. It's not.
Correct. And it, you know, there's a lot of talk right now in the state with a new administration about economic development and what we're going to do to attract companies to the state and then to retain them. And part of the problem is these companies are looking at the housing available for their workforce.
Yeah.
And there is a huge gap in our workforce housing. It just doesn't exist to the extent that it needs to in Connecticut.
What happens now if a person is in that in this or any other affordable housing development? And let's say they get a big raise, and let's say that their household income then exceeds the brackets that have been set up. Do they have to move out when their current lease is up? How does that work?
That's a great question. I've actually gotten that question a lot.
Yeah, how does it work?
So typically the financing programs that we would go to fund these projects, what happens is it's on initial occupancy. So it's on the day that you've signed mm-hmm. your lease. You're not in any way prohibited from getting raises or working overtime. And basically, the calculation is if you make more than 140%, so that's quite the raise you're getting.
All right.
At that point, then you're right. On the next available unit, you would be requested to move.
Oh, okay.
But
okay.
I have to tell you, I've been doing this, I've certainly been doing this in Fairfield County now for longer than I want to admit, and we never actually have run into that. What we have run into, which is a wonderful story, is folks that do get raises, that have been paying affordable rents, are able to save money so that they can then go purchase a home.
Buy a home, yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
So it's a really good story.
Okay.
Very good story.
Interesting. So there is then, and Christine, they would get notice that they would have to move out.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Because there's only so many units, and because I know the vast majority of people would probably say, hey, look at this nice new place I'm in. I'm not leaving here.
Right.
Why the hell would I leave here? I've got it made here.
Yeah.
I've got it made. So what's the next step going on here? And I know that there's kind of trying to be a meeting of the minds here with the abutting property owners. Well, what happens next?
Sure. So, we're right now, and hopefully, listeners, supporters, et cetera, our next public hearing will be July 10th.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be appearing in front of the Conservation Commission. And we've really spent a lot of time, we have some really wonderful professionals that work at Town Hall, both in the engineering department in the town of Fairfield, as well as conservation. We are in a, we do have some wetlands on the property, and we've been working really hard to make sure that we're coming up with a stormwater management and drainage approach so that we do not impact the wetlands on the property or impact any of the stormwater runoff that, they're currently experiencing, in the abutting mm-hmm. Property. So we're really spending a lot of time. The town engineer has been wonderful to work with. And I think, our original plan is we've had several revisions. And I think we're at a point now where, we're getting a thumbs up that we're doing everything, obviously, we should be doing, belts and suspenders, to make sure that the water, right, that rolls off the roof doesn't end up in our neighbor's yard.
God,
and frankly,
that's
what being a good neighbor is about, isn't it, Paul?
Belts and suspenders, too, yeah. Christine, final thoughts on the whole thing? You optimistic about this?
Well, I am optimistic about Carol's project, and I'm also optimistic that there's a movement afoot in the county to recognize that there is a demand for housing stock that we don't currently have, and that's going to be important for the region, certainly for the individual towns, and definitely for the residents in Connecticut.
Excellent. Christine Stewart from Fairfield County Center for Housing Opportunity, and Carol Martin, Executive Director of the Fairfield Housing Corporation and the Fairfield Housing Authority. Thanks, ladies, for stopping by. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much. Chuck in Middlebury. Chuck, you're on WICC. Hi.
How are you?
Good, Chuck. What do you think?
So, as far as them suing the gun manufacturers, mm-hmm. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. It would be the same thing if I were to take my GMC pickup truck and run it into a crowd of people and kill people. Are you going to sue GMC because, they made the truck that I used to kill people? It just doesn't make sense. That it's just ridiculous.
I think, Chuck, and let me pose this to you. I think what they're saying in this lawsuit here is that the AR-15 is, and again, I don't know whether you're a sportsman, whether you own or shoot guns or whatever. They claim in this lawsuit the AR-15 can be too easily modified to become an automatic weapon. Are you a shooter?
Right.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and I am a shooter. Yeah. I actually own an AR.
Okay, so tell me tell me about the gun. What do you tell me about the modification here? Do you know guys that do this? Is this possible?
I don't know anybody personally that has modified one to be, you know, capable of firing fully automatic.
Mm-hmm.
However, I've seen, you know, all the videos online. It can be done. It's not hard. I mean, it's, you know, just a matter of springs and, you know, little fittings and whatnot
yeah.
that you interchange in there. It's not hard to do, no. But on the same token, I mean, you can make a Glock pistol fully automatic. It's not that hard for either gun, really. But at the same time, you know, it doesn't really matter if the gun is fully automatic or not mm-hmm. to me. I mean, even if you have to squeeze the trigger for every round you want to fire, you could do that pretty rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those guns cycle real quickly and, you know, you could do a lot of damage just pulling your finger or, you know, like they had the bump stocks that are now banned and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you can increase the rate of fire just by using one of those. To sue a manufacturer for it, though, I don't see it.
Well, there is a federal protection in this, Chuck, so we're going to have to see, because you probably know, being a gun owner and enthusiast, you know, there is a law out there, I believe, that pretty much indemnifies gun manufacturers for the exact reason that you said. You can't be responsible, you know, if 99.999% use the gun responsibly for hunting or target shooting or whatever, self-defense. You know, what are we supposed to do if you've got one sicko out there who probably shouldn't have the guns in the first place?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And it's just, you know, like I said, I'm kind of on the side that, you know, you should be able to own any firearm you want of any type of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the only thing to that would be, I think, you know, you should possibly have a mental evaluation and make
yeah.
sure that you're, you know, sane enough to own these things. But
yeah.
beyond that, I don't think there should be any restriction on what you can own or what you can use, or whether it's automatic or semi-automatic or, you know, pistol, revolver. It shouldn't matter.
Have you ever...
You know, as an American...
Yeah, I got you. Chuck, have you ever been referred to by anybody you know as a gun nut? Does that upset you? Anybody ever call you that? No, seriously, because I have friends, Chuck, who say... Anybody who would own an AR-15 is a gun nut. And I said, well, why don't you tell that to my lawyer friend, my doctor friend, my college professor friend? Do you ever get that from people?
I've heard it, yeah. but, I mean, I also like cars, too. So I guess I'm a car nut, too. I mean, all right, whatever.
Okay.
It's just a name.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny, but I don't get too offended by it.
No.
I mean, I enjoy guns. I'm not, you know, I don't. Eat, live, sleep, talk, and breathe the gun.
No.
But I like them. I own several of them. I use them, you know, out on the range and all that. And, you know, it's something I enjoy doing. But, whatever.
Whatever. Chuck, my friend Chuck in Middlebury, have a great weekend, buddy. We appreciate the call.
All right. You too.
Thanks, Chuck. Let's go to Bob in Stratford on WICC. Hey, Bob, you're on WICC. Hi.
Hi. How you doing?
Good, Bob. What's up?
I got a little disagreement as far as modifications.
Okay, go ahead.
Guns.
Yep.
I know several guys that are gunsmiths.
Yeah.
And they said in order to modify the gun, you got to be a machinist to remodify that whole receiver block on the gun itself. So
you're not buying, Bob, where the lawsuit says, hold on, let me give you the exact language in the lawsuit. Hold on, let me get what they say. Apparently the lawsuit says they claim that you can do this modification within minutes, if not seconds, and it requires no technical expertise.
No, that's false. Because if you go on, like, YouTube and stuff,
yeah.
all the receiver blocks need to be remachined
mm-hmm.
in order to fit the trigger mechanism for a fully automatic weapon. You just can't do it. You're not going to be able to. And number one is, like a gun manufacturer, they're not going to sell a fully automatic trigger weapon piece, okay, unless it goes through a Class 3 licensed gun dealer. That's something you just can't walk in and say, I want to buy this.
Yeah, see, Bob, I would think, and you sound like, and again, I've never shot, I've played with a couple of guns, not played, but, you know, looked at them at a store in a friend's house, I haven't shot any live ammo. You sound like a guy that would know that. You would think the gun manufacturers like Remington and Colt and all these, Bushmaster, wouldn't their attorneys raise a red flag if they sold something, Bob, that could too easily be modified for a purpose it wasn't designed for?
Correct. They're not going to risk their necks and say, oh, you know, we'll sell this package or whatever so somebody can modify a gun. They're not going to do that because in order to own a fully automatic weapon, you need a Class 3 license,
yeah,
which is through the federal government.
And those are, and I heard that's pretty much impossible.
Unless you wanted to wait like 9 months to go through all the background checks and stuff, for the average person to do it, I don't have that kind of money.
No,
I don't think you do either.
No, trust me, I can barely pay my light bill. No, that's here's some startling research I found as we just kind of poke around the news here, in our last half hour of the show. New study up at UConn. Go Huskies here. You ready for this? God bless UConn. They tackle the tough situations. I'm sorry. I'm just being a little acerbic here. Here's the results from a new UConn study. You ready for this? Stand by for this. Tweeting while watching TV diminishes enjoyment. Thank you. If you tweet, Aaron's looking at me like, if you tweet while you watch TV, it diminishes the enjoyment of the TV. A new UConn study says toggling between viewing entertainment and social media lessens a person's ability to escape reality and enjoy a show. Really? No fertilizer, Sherlock. Really? So you mean to tell me that if somebody is tweeting, they're not going to enjoy the show they're watching? That's mind-boggling right there, huh?
I don't know about that one. The only reason why, and the only reason why is because when Game of Thrones was coming out, I was tweeting during Game of Thrones.
Uh-huh.
And I found it to be more enjoyable because people are...
You think so?
Yeah, because people are watching it alongside you.
You were convincing yourself of that.
No, it works for watching Game of Thrones. It definitely works during the Jet games. I'll tell you that right now.
Well, it's because we have to, you know.
It's cathartic during the Jet games.
It's cathartic. It's like going to confession.
But I actually do think that actually, like, tweeting during, you know, when I'm watching a show or when I'm enjoying something, actually it's a part of the experience. I don't think it takes away from it.
Well, that's not what UConn says. You are going, Aaron Johnson, you're going to doubt the mighty Huskies here? What is wrong with you?
Well, they are starting to do good things. They just
researchers
got back into
the business, studied so. An experience that's become increasingly common, like you just said. More than half of television viewers age 18 to 24 use a second screen web-connected device for engaging on social media to, in fact, discuss what they're watching. What is this? Can't anybody just watch? Seriously. Can anybody just sit there, plop their asses on the couch, honest to God, and just watch the game or watch Game of Thrones or watch whatever you're watching? Oh, I got to tweet about that last scene. Oh, my God.
It does. It adds to the enjoyment. And sometimes, and I will say, sometimes I'm not tweeting. Jet games, I'm definitely tweeting, but I'm usually just watching the timeline of when things are happening. So if something crazy happens in Game of Thrones while it was going
on,
I do tweet. I would just say, oh, my God, did you see that?
Yeah.
And then, you know, I would get three or four more people, some family members, some friends from college that I haven't talked. They'd be like, oh, yeah, I saw that. That was great. Or, oh, yeah, this was so crazy. I can't believe that happened. So it does. It adds to the experience
a little bit.
But
now the mighty Huskies up there say you're wrong. The mighty Huskies are saying you're wrong.
I'm curious of who they actually talk to for this.
They talk to, for the study, it's funny you asked that, Aaron Johnson. For the study, researchers separated, there we go, it gets a little dicey here. they separated 230 college students into two groups. One group watched the TV show Friends. My God, they're watching Friends now. That's good. I'm surprised they didn't feel a trigger warning with Friends. Let's say 115 students watched Friends while tweeting. The other group watched the same show without tweeting. Those tweeting were asked to send at least 5 messages during the half-hour broadcast. Afterwards, this is your tax dollars, folks. Afterwards, both groups completed a survey about the experience. Now, compared to those engaged in media multitasking, participants consuming only one medium were more likely to experience what is called transportation into the content, and in turn had more intensified emotions. I know people that get that way with mushrooms. They don't need any. Given the prevalence of television shows that actively initiate social media conversations among viewers by promoting conversations, the authors say the typical author cop-out, more research needs to be done. That means we need more money in our department to do the research. All right.
Yeah, excellent. But when you're doing something like Friends that's been out for a while, as opposed to a show that's, if they were going to do like a new episode of a show, then maybe.
Because let's face it, as entertaining as Friends was, it had no medieval sex. I mean, that's what they have to do. How can you compare Friends to Game of Thrones when from the, 10 minutes into every Game of Thrones, it's like, and Friends is like, they're in Central Perk. Oh, man. And yes, I do, in fact, I don't tweet occasionally. I don't tweet. I occasionally go on Facebook during a Jets game. And it's usually the same message. I go on to Facebook, 3 simple words, man, we suck. And that's it. And I'm fine.